name's Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Nikki, for the introduction. And thank you for everybody who's been up here already tonight. I've already learned from you. When I saw, I think it was Daniel was up here, and I was looking at his high school ring. It looked like he had his high school ring on. I remember I lost mine. I had it maybe a month, and I was wasted and lost it. Disappointing, you know. It's something that you, it's kind of an earmark in your life. Anyway, let me start at the beginning. My sobriety date is June 14th, 1990. I am not a first-time winner. I come from a family of alcoholics. There are five children, and my dad was in recovery. He got sober in November, and I was born in January, and I'm the youngest of the five children. I was called the AA baby. That's how I was raised, being called the AA baby. So my dad obviously went to meetings, and he stayed sober. He had four boys, and then he had me, and his motto in, as we were growing up was, I'm saving the seat for every one of you. And it all came through. You know, all five children are alcoholics. There's definitely, I believe, a genetic predisposition to alcoholism and drug addiction. We're blessed to be sober. My dad died with 33 years sober, and he broke the chain for us. I was 28 when I got sober. Let's see, let me go back. I think I was 11 when I first started smoking cigarettes. The last gentleman that was speaking has overcome a lot. You've overcome a lot in your life, and I'm proud of you for staying sober. It's hard, and you know, you lost your mom, you have a disability that you've grown up with your whole life, and that's not easy. You talked about looking up to your older sister and kind of hanging out with the older crowd, and that's what it was like for me. I'm the youngest, and you know, I caught my brother smoking at 11. I was going to tell on him, and so he gave me a cigarette, and that's pretty much how it, you know, went on, you know. And then I caught him smoking pot, and I was going to tell on him, and he got me high, and I started smoking pot. So, you know, being after those older siblings, let's see. In my house, when people got mad, they fought with 2x4s and bricks, and the police were there regularly. It was pretty crazy. A lot of rage and anger. We didn't talk about our feelings. We stuffed them down inside of us. My dad did not spend a lot of time at home. I can understand that. As a recovering alcoholic, I would not want to be in the same house as the five active young little people. Let's see. I had my first drink. It was, I think it was around 15. I'm not sure on the how old I was, but I remember what it was. It was Southern Comfort, and I had spaghetti for dinner. Wasn't a good mix. I hung out at church. I was raised in a church. It's part of my story. I went to the same church my whole life. I was baptized, confirmed, and married there. Raised my children, baptized, confirmed them in the church, and buried my parents in the church. So I attended the same church for 45 years. And that was in New Jersey. But I grew up with being involved in the youth group, and all of my friends in the youth group drank. That was what we did, as you know, outside of church. We would steal our parents' booze and we would drink. I was pretty controlled at drinking in the beginning because I wasn't going to be like them, my brothers, who were very crazy, mean, angry people. And I wasn't going to be like them. I wasn't going to be like my dad. I was the AA baby. The denial wall, just, it was brick by brick by brick. And I started hearing it from the time I was 1 year old, the AA baby. So it took a long time for the barrier to break, but it did, thank God. I was a big control freak with my drinking. I would be the one that would drink more than anybody else, and then I would say I was okay, and I would put you in my car and I would drive you home. And the road, the two lines would be blurry, and I'd be going over them. I have no idea why it is I didn't kill somebody driving. I drove drunk a lot. I didn't think I had a problem. I didn't see it. I also did drugs. It's part of my it's part of my story. I did, pot and coke and anything that, I didn't put anything in my arms, but pretty much anything that went up the nose, I did it. I met a girl. I had a girlfriend. It was hard for me to have friends because when your neighbors would see the police at your house regularly, there was an issue with allowing your children over to hang out and spend the night. And so I didn't have a lot of really close friends until I did have my youth group friends, but I mostly was friends with guys. I have four older brothers, so at that age in my teenage years, I was mostly friends with young men and that were in my age group. And I did meet a girl who I was a good codependent, and she grew up in a house where her stepmother beat her regularly, and it was really sad. And my mom and dad did the best they could in raising five alcoholic children. They loved us, and my mom lost her mom when she was 6 years old. Our speaker talked about his mother overdosing. That's hard when my mom recently died. She was 76, but my mom's mom died when she was six, and my dad's dad died when he was 4 months old. So, my parents did the best they could with what they had and what they knew. And basically, children were to be seen and not heard. That's the way I was raised. We were hit with the belt, and it was in anger. That's, how they would react. And then we learned from that. And the alcohol, you put alcohol and drugs, and it's a real mess. But I met this girl who was being beaten by her stepmother, and we had an opportunity to go visit my aunt. Let's just say, for argument's sake, like from here to Orlando. We were going to spend a week of summer vacation with my aunt. And we were 15, and my cousin at the time, 18 was the drinking age, so I'm really old. I'm 48 years old, and the drinking age was 18. And my cousin got us into a bar. We were 15, and he was supposed to have us home by 11. Here we are visiting my aunt. I'm under her care, and I have a guest that I've taken that she's allowed me to come along for the week. And we get one of the first nights on this vacation, we get caught past curfew and also found out that we were at a bar. Well, Mr. AA was called. My dad was called. He was coming the next day to pick us up. We'd only been there one day. We were going to have a whole week there, and here it was one day. And talk about consequences. I had parents that cared about me and loved me, and they loved all of us, and they did the best they could, with what they knew. So anyway, Mr. AA came to get us, and we knew he was coming the next day, and we freaked out because we knew my girlfriend was going to get really hurt. Her stepmother was really probably going to use, frying pans and things that would leave marks, and she was pretty helpless. It's not a whole lot you can do when you're 15 years old. So we decided to run away. And in the middle of the night, we left with $5, something like that, and we hitchhiked from New Jersey to Florida, 15. God was watching over us. Nothing bad happened to us. It could have. We got picked up in Cherry Hill, and that's not far. It would be from here to Largo. And we told the guy that we were college students. Again, he bought into it, 15 years old. And he was on unemployment. And so, I'm sure he thought, oh, they're cute, And so he decided he would drive us to Florida. He was was collecting unemployment, so he had just gotten his check. So we end up in the car with this guy, and he's driving us to Florida. Well, he decides to start drinking, and my girlfriend also drank heavily, and so did I, but I was at the wall of denial. Not me. I'm not going to be like them. I'm not like my brothers. I'm not like my dad. I don't have a problem. So I ended up driving most of the time. I've never been behind the wheel of a car. I don't have a license. I'm on 95, if you guys have ever done that trip down. You know, if you ever saw Pee Wee's Big Adventure, I'm like the crazy woman. But I didn't, nothing happened. In the back seat, there was some stuff going on with the guy and the girl, my girlfriend, but it could have been a lot worse. I'm telling you, God really was watching over us, because it could have been really bad. So as soon as we got to Jacksonville, we tried to, I did a lot of shoplifting when I was a kid. It was just part of what I did. And we didn't have enough money. We were hungry. So I picked up the phone in Jacksonville to tell my mother, I'm 15, I'm hungry. Where are you? I say, the corner of, Chestnut and Brown. I'm telling you, there was a cop there like that. It was so quick. I couldn't believe it. Well, we ended up getting put into like a detention home for adolescents, that are under the age. And I got flown home. My girlfriend ended up never going back home again, which was a good thing. She ended up in a boarding school, but she didn't have to go back to that crazy stepmother. So God, it's just a miracle how things worked out. A year later, I met a boy, 16. I fell in love. At this point, I was getting high a lot. I drank, but the wall of denial on the alcohol, it's really hard for me, but my problem is alcohol. But at the time, I can't tell you, I drank a lot, but I also got high a lot. And I remember I cut school so many times I forgot my schedule in high school. That's pretty bad. You don't know what period, what class you have. I didn't even know I didn't even know how to get into my locker. So I met this boy, 16, and again, a good codependent. His parents were divorced, and he was sad because his mom lived in Arizona. So I stole my parents' car, and we drove from New Jersey we got caught in New Mexico. We were on our way to Arizona. I got pulled over in Ohio. I'm 16. I don't have a driver's license. The car is reported as stolen, and they don't run the plates. Not real bright. But anyway, I talked my way out of the ticket. And we got pulled over again in New Mexico, and they ran the plates, and the car was reported stolen. So we went to jail. It was a small town in New Mexico. There was no floor in the jail. It was dirt, like really old school jail. And I couldn't get put in with the general population because I was under 18. So they had to put me in the padded cell because I couldn't be put in with the regular population. I also thought I was pregnant, the drama. I was a really good drama queen. I was. I had no idea that I had a problem, I did. So anyway, let's see, my mom decides my sister-in-law is going to fly out and drive the car back. My sister-in-law is now in recovery. She's no longer my sister-in-law. But at the time, she was a raging alcoholic drug addict. So when she picked me up from New Mexico and we drove back to New Jersey, every stop was a major city and a major hookup, whatever. And when I got back home, I had to meet the firing squad. I had a couple of favorite brothers. I had two brothers that were pretty and another two brothers that were like, considering they were alcoholics, they were pretty well grounded in that they had family obligations. They would mow the lawn. They would, you know, like they were pretty, although they were drinkers. So anyway, one of my favorite brothers, when I got back from my trip from New Mexico, didn't speak to me for 9 months. And let me tell you, as a kid, with those older siblings, it means a lot. When your siblings turn off their love to you, it hurts. But look at what I had done. I created a real problem. Didn't see I had a problem. Well, now it's coming up on, I'm now 18, and I'm legally drinking. Oh, what a different world that is. I am doing that control thing away a lot more than I realize. I'm drinking regularly. There was a bar near the high school, so I would go and drink during school day and go back again, you know. I had good grades in my senior year. I actually started thinking about going to college, but couldn't pull that. I actually had pulled it off enough where I was starting to look. But then I met my husband. I'm married 29 years. I married a nice man. We drank together. He's a social drinker. I met him in a bar. Anyway, I met my husband, and I asked him to marry me. So I knew him. I wanted to, you know, was really looking to get out of the house. And I got lucky. You know, I'm 18. I asked this man to marry me. He said he'll think about it. And a couple days later, he came back with a ring. Actually, he said, let's live together. And I said, my father would never. I was the youngest and the only girl. My father was a lieutenant colonel. He would never have allowed me to live with him. It would have. I already broke my parents' heart enough, you know. So I knew that wasn't going to work. So he came back a few days later with a ring that his mom had, and we started building a life together. This man has a very good temperament. He didn't grow up in a house where alcohol and drugs were rampant through the house. Within 9 months of being married to me, he had punched his hand in a wall. It's amazing how we infect people, like we infect them with our disease. It's you know, people that normally are just normal people. So anyway, obviously things were not going well, newlywed, and we have never had a lot of money, my husband and I. We have a lot of love, but we're not rich. We never will be. My parents were middle class people. My husband's parents were poor. His parents, my parents, they didn't go to college. Out of the five of us, of my family, I'm the only college graduate. I did it in sobriety. Anyway, I met, got married 9 months later. We have no money. So we just bought a brand new car, and I'm drinking and I'm drugging a lot. I mean, it's bad, but I don't see it. I don't see any of it. I don't have any major accidents. What happens is we end up moving in with my husband's parents. Nicest people in the world. I lived with them for 20 years. And I'm telling you, I miss them. They were good people. Kind, loving. They opened their home to us. We ended up building a mother-daughter house. And we had a five-year plan. And then God decided 2 years later that I was going to have a child. And I was very angry. Now, it became, this is where the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde was taken over with the addiction. I resented the pregnancy immediately. It interfered with the drinking and the drugging. And I drank regularly and got sick often. When the baby came, I was not a good parent, as far as I would shake the baby and do things that were not appropriate with newborns. And as she started to get older, I used a wooden spoon on her, and I left marks. I was raising my children the way that I was raised, but it's different when you're an alcoholic. I had a lot of rage, and the alcohol was, it was a miracle. When I stopped drinking, I couldn't believe when I came up on a year that it had almost been a year since I hadn't hit a kid, one of my kids. And I did it every day. I woke up every day, it was going to be a spanking day, because I was a lunatic. All I wanted to do was drink and get high. And I had these kids that obviously need things. So as my story progresses, I have this one child, and she's cows down pretty easily to the all I have to do is lift the spoon, and she's afraid. And so I ruled her that way. And I would go out every weekend with my husband and drink and get high and be hungover. And my parents would keep my parents would keep the children overnight, or my husband's parents. We lived with them. So it's going so well, why not have another? So we decide that we don't want an only child. So we were blessed and able to get pregnant. So I had a second child, and this child was strong-willed. So it didn't matter how many times I took the spoon out to hit her, because I was pissed off because they were interfering with my drinking and drugging. It didn't matter. She could be raw, and she would still do what I didn't want her to do. I had a big control problem. That's what drinking did to me, my alcoholism. I was a big control freak, and the wall of denial just kept building. One day I opened the newspaper and I read an article, and it said, "Are you out of control? Do you hit your kids? Is your life unmanageable?" And I honestly was like, whoa, like there somebody knows about me. But it wasn't the alcohol. There was no way I was ready to address that yet, even though I was physically not in good shape and it was bad. But I ended up going to Parents Anonymous. That's what that ad was for. So I don't know if you've ever known anybody who's come in through AA through Parents Anonymous, but that's how I ended up here. So I started going to meetings, and it started to teach me about giving the kids choices. Like, I had no parenting skills. I didn't know. My parents did the best they could with what they had, and now here I was. And I was active, and I had to learn how to parent. So it was a good experience for me as far as learning to give the children choices and timeouts. And all this stuff sounds corny, but it's really sad when you hurt your kids, you know? So it was over a year and a half. I was going to meetings, and they kept questioning me about the alcohol. I'd be like, "What are you talking about? I don't have a problem. I don't." But I would have episodes where I would rage on the kids and hurt them, and they would be like, they would say, "Are you sure you don't drink?" Or, "No, it's not, I don't have a problem. I'm not going to be like them. I'm not like my father." So then they suggested I started journaling. So I get upset when I get to this part of my story. It happens every time. So the two-year-old, you know, she needs something. What could she need, right? Everything. She needs me to help her. And I'm getting ready to go out. I had an MO when I'm getting ready to go out. I would always dress up real sexy and feel really good. By the end of the night, I looked like shit. I felt like shit. I threw up. Oh, I don't mean to curse. It wasn't pleasant. It wasn't attractive. But anyway, I'm getting ready to go out, and this two-year-old's at my door wanting something. I'm journaling about it, and I'm getting really pissed off. And I ended up raging at her, shutting the door and locking it and not letting her in. And she's pounding on the door wanting my attention. So I noted that. I go to a meeting, Parents Anonymous meeting, and they're like, that's really interesting. So then again, another episode where It's the dinner table. I was a big control freak. You will sit down and you will eat. Don't get up. If you get up, there's... like 6-year-old and a 2-year-old. Guess what? 6-year-old and 2-year-olds get up from the table. Well, not in my house. And again, it was the way... That's what I knew. And the alcohol, what it was I was getting ready to go out. So it's around 5 o'clock. The music's on. My husband's not home from work yet. I start drinking wine. And they're at the table. And I tell them not to get up. And my 6-year-old got up. And I hit her. I gave her a black eye. And it was bad. You know, I felt bad. But I didn't know what... I was so desperate. But anyway, I journaled. And I realized, oh my God, because then I would drink. It was like, whoa. I had no idea. I honestly had no idea that I was an alcoholic. So I ended up going to meetings. I called my brother right away and I said, you know, I think I have a problem. He was already in recovery and he'd already heard me say, it's the beer, it's the wine, it's the vodka, it's like I went through all that, you know. And then, of course, it was if I was mixing it with some kind of drug that didn't agree, it was that. And so I did 90 meetings in 90 days. It was hard. I had a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old and a husband that, God bless him, you know. He was very patient. It's still difficult, you know. I mean, we're married 29 years, but when you're in a relationship, when you come into a relationship, when you're active, and then you're, then you, it's a lot of growing. I mean, they say no relationships for a year. Well, you know, I was married. I had 2 kids. Every day I went home to that. That was my responsibility. I was blessed in that. I knew I had to. I had no idea who I was inside. I hated myself. I'd look in the mirror and I was disgusted. I cried every meeting for a year. The shame and the guilt over the way I treated the children. But when I came up on the year anniversary, and it had been almost a year, I did have a flip. I mean, when I talk about that, it means a lot to me. Where I hit them once in a year. I was amazed. I couldn't believe it. It was the alcohol. It was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And then after that, I didn't have any episodes of hitting my kids. You know, that's a miracle because, you know, I was going to be one of those mothers who threw one of their kids out the window, put them in a car, drove them into a lake, took a pot of boiling water, poured it over, like really, like I was crazy if I had continued drinking. God spared me and my children from that. In sobriety, it's been good. I knew right away I had to put first things first. I lost myself completely. So I knew if I lost my kids and my husband that I would have to let that go, but I had to find myself. So I delved into the program. I did the 90-90. I made coffee. I was out of the house a lot in the evening. You know, it was frustrating for my husband, but, you know, it is what it is. It still is what it is for me. I still have to do what I need to do to stay sober. I have to ask a question. Does this meeting go right till 9:45? I mean, 8:45? Okay, so I didn't know if you had a break or you did your chips. When do you break? Okay, I've got my watch here, so that's what I see too, but I didn't know what the format was. Thank you. I got a college education in sobriety. I wouldn't have done that if it weren't for my husband's parents and my parents. They watched the children. I graduated with a degree in mathematics. I taught high school. I hated it. Hated it. I had first period geometry. Kids hate math. They hate it. They hate to be there at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, I love math. It's, to me, it's amazing. I was very animated. I love math. But when you go into teaching, they don't tell you that kids hate math. Most kids. I didn't teach honors. I taught the kids who had special needs, learning disabled. I had seniors that were in a 10th grade geometry class, you know, like they just, and so anyway, I taught high school for 4 years, and I bounced around to different high schools thinking that if I went to a Catholic school, maybe it would be better. I wasn't, you have to be a hard ass when you're a teacher. I was too nice. I did a good job. I mean, I was, you know, I resigned. So then when I moved down to Florida, I left my hometown after 45 years and 16 years sober. Let me tell you, it's an when you leave everything you've ever known and come, it's raw. It's raw. But I did it sober. I moved in moving day. I had intergroup. I had someone meet me. They took me to a meeting. I did 90 and 90. As soon as I moved down, my husband was like, here we go again. Yep. So that's who I am. You know, I mean, he accepts it. We go to counseling. I've been married all these years. I think out of the 29 years, we've been counseling 20 of them. And it's because of my sobriety. I have to put it first. And it's hard. It's hard, the balance, you know. My kids do not respect me today. They don't live with me. I'm really grateful for that. I had boundary issues with them growing up. I think I overcompensated for the abuse when they were little, 6 and 2, now 27 and 24. You know, I mean, they were little, but so I'm really grateful, thank you, that they don't live with me because they don't respect me. And I'm a good person. I'm not, it's just, you know, and plus I think raising girls is different than raising boys. My mother had 4 boys and then me and said I was harder than all of them. That's not real encouraging, you know, but it's the truth, I guess. Because I have daughters and it's just, my husband gets along better with them. So I was able to get a college education in sobriety. I'm really glad I studied something I love. And I'm really glad that I have choices today. I went into a career that was a good career as far as financially good, pension, benefits. I wasn't happy. I left teaching and I went into real estate. I didn't like that. And then I went into, as I was an office manager. And then I moved to Florida and I can't find a good paying job. And it's really hard to find a good paying job in Florida. It is. It's really hard. I mean, I you know, it's like amazing to me. So I went back into teaching and I went into a middle school thinking I would like that better. I disliked high school more than middle school, but I didn't like middle school either. Disrespectful, the kids, they're kids, you know. I just love it too much, my subject matter, that I'm too serious. I'm too serious about it. Kids don't really, it's just not, it's not part. So anyway, what I did was I applied for government position here in Tampa, and I'm making less than my 24-year-old who does not have a college education. But you know what? I like my job. It's not something I want to. I'm looking to get another government position. I've been applying, but it takes time and effort. And my AA, I'm so blessed that God has given me the women that are in my life down here. It's just, I'm here 3.5 years, and it's just in the last 6 months that I really feel like I belong with the women that are in my home group, that my sponsor, her sponsor, the sponsor that sponsors her, you know, that whole, for me, that's how it has to work. I can't do this alone. I need help. If I have a question, I'm going to ask. I'm not afraid to ask. If I need help, I'm going to ask. I realized when I moved down here, I had this mentality that it's just going to be my husband and I. We don't need anything else. You know, one daughter's in Colorado and one's in New York. And then all of a sudden, I realized my program, it wasn't working. I was going to meetings. I was doing commitments, coffee commitments, and caring, but I wasn't making the connection with the women because I was thinking all I needed was my husband and to go to meetings. And now it's like again, we're back to that where my husband will be like, you're going out again tonight? Yeah, but he knows I'm going out with the girl. It's not like he doesn't trust me. It's just I have to leave him home. Oh, well, he can go to Al-Anon. It's available. You know, it's not like I have to be responsible today. And if I don't go to meetings and I don't have friends and relationships in AA, I am not going to stay sober. I cannot do this alone. I have to say that I was sober a year and a half. It was coming up on my 10-year wedding anniversary. Before I left the house, and believe me, when my husband and I go out and we get dressed up, it's special, you know. So it was my 10-year wedding anniversary. I got dressed up. I looked really sexy. He looked really hot. And before I left the house, I said to myself, I'm going to treat myself. I had a year and a half sobriety. This is scary. This is how the disease works. And I've been going to meetings regularly, had a sponsor, and I said, I'm going to have a dessert. I'm going to have a dessert with alcohol in it. It's my 10-year wedding anniversary, sober a year and a half. I went out, and I did that. When the dessert menu came, and I said, oh, yes, I'll have the Grand Marnier poured over top the strawberries. It doesn't matter if it's baked in, if it's poured on top. For me, I can't do it, but I did it. So I had a year and a half sobriety. I ate the strawberries, and I don't know if you remember your first cigarette or your first drink, but it goes right to your head, and it makes you sick. But then the next time, you just keep doing it till your body gets used to it. Well, I got sick from it. Thank you, God, because I could have picked up. But I gave up a year and a half sobriety because I had a slip. Before I left the house, I said, I'm going to treat myself. I'm going to do this. But I didn't tell anybody about it for 9 months. I went to meetings. It ate a hole inside of me. You can't keep secrets. You're not going to stay sober if you keep secrets. So I finally fessed up, and I admitted that I had had a dessert with alcohol poured over top of it, and I gave up a year and a half sobriety. And I'm so glad I did, because every time I go out to eat now, I look at the menu. Every time I go to get cough syrup, I look at the ingredients. Because for me, I can't have alcohol. I can't even have it if they say it's going to burn off, or because it's very cunning, baffling, and powerful. So it's been a really good journey. I'm blessed that I have the women that I have down here that I'm finally close to. I can say I'm close to them. And I'm real blessed in having a new sponsee. Not new, but new for me. And I had women that I sponsored in New Jersey, but I hadn't had anybody that connected with me down here that we, you know, stayed in a relationship as sponsor and sponsee, and I've been blessed to have that. In the last 6 months, my program has grown tremendously since then. Again, another example of I can't do this alone. I don't have much more to say. I'm gonna close early. Is someone gonna come up and close the meeting? Okay. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Gina, and I'm an addict and alcoholic. I get a big thrill out of looking over the vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly, like some small thing I did a number of years ago, played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal of enthusiasm and stick to it everness. If you will pardon the interjection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in a bed of 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength has not yet returned, and I would like to so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let not louse it up with our Freudian complexes and things that are interesting in the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, to resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand that love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those two things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member of the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing, none of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain these things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend our attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.
This home group strongly believes in sponsorship. Well, anyone that's willing and able to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Holy crap. Look at all you guys. Well, home group members, please raise your hand. What's up? Where's Bobby? Okay. Next week, the meeting's not going to be here.